Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to Essex Church and to this, our gathered community of Kensington Unitarians. Ours is a community created by all who walk through our doors, by all who connect with us through the internet, and by all who keep in touch from around the world in so many different ways. Today, let's take a moment, all of us who are here, to think of the people who cannot be with us. And in that we include people who are not well today, people in lands afar, people who are working or engaged in other aspects of their busy lives, on holiday, travelling, caring for young children. We might think of those who have sadly died, people who through their efforts have helped keep this congregation in good shape over many years, those with whom we'll always be connected through our gratitude and our love. And all of us who are here this morning, look around for a moment, smile at one another. Recognise each other for what we are. Individuals on the shared path of being human. Today's service has miracles as its theme and returns to the idea that the greatest miracle of all might be that we exist. The gift of life. The gift of life that animates us, all of existence, life that brings us together here now. Welcome to you all, including those who are trying to text at this moment. I always think that this palace, this simple flame, connects us with communities all around the world. It's a flame that recognises the oneness of all, the diversity of all. It's a light that shines everywhere and accepts all. May it burn in our hearts this day and bring warmth and love to our living. Well, if you just remember two things about this service, I'd suggest that they could be, one, that it's a blooming miracle to be alive. And the second is that there are some really weedy jokes about miracles. So brace yourselves. In John's Gospel, the first miracle Jesus performed was the turning of water into wine when the drinks had run out at a wedding feast. Isn't that a marvellous image? Full of possible interpretations, leaving you with the sense that Jesus would be a good chum to have. You might have heard this joke about a priest who's driving home. A police officer driving behind the priest notices that his car is swerving, just gently, so he pulls him over. "Sir," the officer asks, "have you perhaps been drinking just a little bit tonight?" "Only water," the priest replies. And the officer, a little suspicious, shines his flashlight into the priest's car. He notices an empty bottle of wine in the passenger seat. And the priest follows his eyes and cries, "Good Lord, he's done it again." And then a serious bit from Matthew's Gospel, just to remind us of that story of walking on the water. This is in chapter 14. "Immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him while he dismissed the crowd. And then he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. And shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. And when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. 'It's a ghost,' they said, and they cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, 'Take courage, it's I, don't be afraid.' 'Lord, if it's you,' Peter replied, 'tell me to come to you on the water.' 'Come,' he said. And then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and he began sinking, crying out, 'Lord, save me.' And immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. 'You of little faith,' he said, 'why did you doubt?' And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. And then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, 'Truly, you are the Son of God.'" We don't have time today to explore one of the many interesting theological issues about this, which is that Buddhism has remarkably similar stories about the Buddha walking on water. And that's one of the things that has led some people to think that Jesus travelled to India and these stories connected in some way. I'm not so sure about that. But a more simple explanation is simply that revered spiritual leaders are often described as performing feats that are beyond natural laws. And the ability to walk on water certainly signifies someone special.
For the second readings, you've got two for the price of one. The first one is some words by Walt Whitman and then by Thich Nhat Hanh. So some words from Walt Whitman. Why, who makes much of a miracle? As to me, I know of nothing else but miracles. The wonderfulness of the sundown, or of stars shining so quiet and bright, or the exquisite, delicate, thin curve of the new moon in spring. These, with the rest, one and all, are to me miracles, the whole referring, yet each distinct, and in its place. To me, every hour of the light and dark is a miracle. Every cubic inch of space is a miracle. Every square yard of the surface of the earth is spread with the same. Every foot of the interior swarms with the same. To me, the sea is a continual miracle. The fishes that swim, the rocks, the motion of the waves, the ships with men in them. What stranger miracles are there? And some thoughts from Thich Nhat Hanh. I like to walk alone on country paths, rice plants and wild grasses on both sides, putting each foot down on the earth in mindfulness, knowing that I walk on the wondrous earth. In such moments, existence is a miraculous and mysterious reality. People usually consider walking on water or in thin air a miracle. But I think the real miracle is not to walk either on water or in thin air, but to walk on earth. Every day we are engaged in a miracle which we don't even recognize. A blue sky, white clouds, green leaves, the black, curious eyes of a child, our own two eyes, all is a miracle.
A slightly different form to our meditation today. I'm just going to read a few of the verses from Auguries of Innocence by William Blake. And then we're going to hear a sung version of that. And then when the singing finishes, let's just sit together in silence for a few minutes, and that will be ended by our bell. You probably know the first verse of this well, but I'm just going to pick out one or two other verses. To see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and an eternity in an hour. A robin redbreast in a cage puts all heaven in a rage. A dove house filled with doves and pigeons shudders hell through all its regions. A dog starved at his master's gate predicts the ruin of the state. It is right it should be so, for man was made for joy and woe. And when this we rightly know, through the world we safely go. To see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. Okay, joke number two. An enthusiastic young Unitarian minister started work in a small town where there was both a Catholic church and a Jewish synagogue. and the Catholic priest and the Jewish rabbi welcomed that young minister warmly and offered her any assistance she might need in her job. Do you know, they even invited her to go fishing with them on a local lake. And so they were sitting in the boat about 30 yards from the shore when the priest said that he was thirsty, but they'd left the picnic hamper on the dock. So the rabbi said, "I'll get it, don't worry." And with that, he just stepped out of the left-hand side of the boat, walked to the dock, and then returned with the hamper. Later on, the rabbi caught a fish, but then the net for getting it out of the water, that had been left on the dock as well. So the priest stepped out of the left-hand side of the boat, walked to the dock, returned with the net. Well, that young minister was astounded. Us Unitarians, we're just not used to these sorts of miraculous powers. But when the priest said that he'd left his bottle opener in the car, well, that young minister, she stood up, she was determined to show her own levels of faith, and she said, "Don't worry, I'll get it for you." Without a moment's hesitation, she stepped out of the right-hand side of the boat and promptly sank right up to her neck in the water. And then the rabbi turned to the priest and said, "Oh dear, we didn't have time to show her where those stepping stones are." So how are we going to define a miracle? In theological terms, a miracle is something that occurs in the physical realm through God's intervention, and as such, it does not follow natural laws. It is truly the meaning of supernatural. So a miracle, a miraculous event, these are the things that we think are impossible. They can't happen, and yet they do through divinity in the world. But then it's a word much used in everyday speech, isn't it? I don't know if it's one of yours. "It's a miracle I caught that bus, found my purse, bumped into an old friend." Or the miraculous snowstorms in June that arrive periodically. The use of the word conveying something that we just didn't think was going to happen, but then it did. Another way of defining it is that a miracle kind of fills us with awe and wonder. You know, those sorts of things that might stop us in our tracks or really shake us up in some way, disrupting our normal, everyday, half-awake state, has us seeing something with new eyes in a way that we've not seen or experienced before. I mean, have a look at that quote attributed to Einstein. Apparently he didn't really say this, but it's too good not to use. Allegedly, Einstein said, "There are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle." I don't know about you. I wonder if most of us know both of those states. I think most of us have the ability to live at times as though nothing in life is a miracle. Those times when we just don't notice what's going on around us because we're just so engrossed in, or even weighed down by, the serious business of living, earning a living, getting through the day, trying to complete our 101 tasks on our never-decreasing to-do list. And when we're in that kind of state, well, we just don't pay attention. But equally, I reckon all of us have got that ability to really live as though everything is a miracle. Times when we truly feel deep within us that miracle of being alive, that magical sense. They can take us by surprise, can't they, these moments? Have you got any, I wonder, of these examples? It can happen to me here sometimes when I suddenly hear a bird sing out in the garden, or I catch a glimpse of a wild animal somewhere, or I look at a flower or a landscape as though I've just never seen it before. Or times when we've been in love, or we spend time in the company of a young child and experience something of their wonder and curiosity at life. Don't young children seem to have an inbuilt awareness at times of the miracle of existence? To them, everything is new and magical, and they can allow their curiosity about life to guide them. Those immortal words by William Blake that we heard set to music earlier on, doesn't that express something of this magic? To see the world in a grain of sand and heaven in a wild flower, isn't that something of the essence of our potential for finding the miraculous in the simplest of places? I've talked to a few people this week about things that they think are miraculous, and here are just a few of the things that people mentioned. Firstly, this was repeated a number of times, the fact that we're alive at all, as the individuals that we are, unique individuals created by that chance, never to be repeated encounter of a sperm and an egg. That's pretty amazing. The fact that each of us is born with 50 trillion cells, I don't know how they count them. And these appear to be new, but actually they're made of atoms that have been circulating in this universe for billions of years. Every atom in your body was once made in the blazing heat of temperatures a million times hotter than molten rock as the stars were formed. We are made from the stuff of stars. And what about our universe? Our planet Earth, a tiny part of our galaxy, the Milky Way. Just occasionally we can glimpse it, not in London, on a dark night. And that the Milky Way is perhaps just one of 100,000 million other galaxies. And so it goes on. What about the animal kingdom? I was asking children what they thought was miraculous, and one child said, a giraffe. And then a friend who's a scientist was comparing that and saying, what about protozoans? Apparently 5,000 protozoans in a group gaggled together, they'd only measure half an inch across. Now, we've all got our own examples of this, and I suspect that most of us as liberal religious people perhaps agree with that, the sentiment of that hymn that we sang earlier on about what a marvellous piece of work are we, that actually it is just a miracle to be alive in these wondrous bodies, in this wondrous earth. We don't need then to believe in supernatural occurrences, in the inexplicable. Or do we? I mean, is everything just like those hidden stepping stones on the lake, understandable once we're in the know? So I've been thinking all this week about miracles, and in the end, I think there are certain ways that we can respond. One is to find a rational explanation. As a teenager, at school, studying religious education, I was really grateful to have a teacher who helped us to find a sensible explanation for every single miracle, because that's what I needed to hear at the time. I mean, a classic example of this, but it's not the only one, is to think of the feeding of the 5,000. And just think of that as a large version of one of our congregational lunches. Jesus, by his example of generosity, encourages people to share the little they have, and it turns out, whoa, to be more than enough for everyone, with some leftovers. Another way of interpreting biblical miracles is to recognise the effect that Jesus' actions clearly had on the crowd. The New Testament uses the word sign more often than miracle, and to the first century Jewish crowds, Jesus' actions were highly significant, and I don't think we can fully understand this. Those seeming signs were very significant reminders of their own sacred scriptures. So in feeding the 5,000, for example, Jesus is reminding everybody who's there of Moses feeding the people in the desert. In walking on the water, he's giving a sign that he is like Moses parting the Red Sea. Both of them can control the elemental world. The fact that Jesus' actions had such an effect on the crowd seems to speak of their Jewish first century longing for a saviour, the Messiah who was going to save them from Roman tyranny. Another way of interpreting miracles is to see them as occurring a long time ago, but not today. The idea that the nature of revelation of God's presence in the world has changed. Another way is to think that miracles represent that which we don't yet know or understand. I like to think sometimes how things like our ability to walk on the moon or talk to somebody on the other side of the world through a little moving screen or through a device that we hold to our ear. Or think of some of the medical advances that we've made in the last 50 years or so. A face transplant, a heart transplant, for example. Think how these skills might appear to somebody from 100 years ago. In trying to understand miracles, we might consider a psychological approach where we note a human need to believe in the miraculous. If ever you want to be entertained, just have a search on the internet for miracles, modern day miracles. My favourite from this week is a lovely story from the Shropshire Star newspaper in 2011. Oswestry man finds face of Jesus on sock. And at the time of the report, 23-year-old James Henderson was still trying to decide, apparently, what to do with the sock. It may turn up. And we have kept hoping here at Essex Church that something significant might appear in our damp patch over there in the corner. Yeah, we're living in hope. So there are all these different ways of explaining miracles, and they've all been useful to me at different times. But you know, these days, I also find myself accepting some miracles as indeed possibly miraculous. Accepting, for example, the possibility that healing can sometimes occur in really unexpected ways, but more often doesn't. And there is something appealing to me in considering just how much we humans don't know about ourselves, about one another, about our world, our universe. And all of that then just brings me straight back to the miracle of life itself and the thought that the sun, that great central star of our little solar system, it brings light and life here to planet Earth and allows us to be together here on a Sunday morning to appreciate the wonders of being alive. Amen. And so, may the blessing of love be upon us. May the power of love direct and sustain us. And may we be the people who notice miracles and help them to occur, so creating this world as an ever more loving and compassionate home for all its inhabitants. Amen. Go well and blessed be.